and welcome to another edition of Visions. With me, Eudeni Wickham-Ashby, and my very special guest today, Deanne Phillips, from the Minustinus Gravis Association. Welcome to the program, Deanne.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, because Minustinus Gravis is a condition that we rarely hear about, and therefore many persons are not very knowledgeable about the condition and the characteristics and so on. So can you share with us, what is Minustinus Gravis?
So Minustinus Gravis is a condition coming from the Greek world, and it means grave muscle weakness. So persons who have Minustinus Gravis will experience symptoms such as being tired. They will experience weakness to their limbs, especially coming on to like midday, and the weakness would resolve with rest. They will also sometimes experience something that the doctors call ptosis, which is the drooping of the eye. So to other persons, it may look like the eye is swollen, but the eye actually isn't swollen. We have something called a myasthenic crisis. So a myasthenic crisis is where the myasthenia gravis is acting up, and it can actually affect the person's breathing muscles and their swallowing. So when it affects their swallowing or their breathing muscles, that can be categorized as serious, because it means then that they can actually get problems breathing, or they can need a ventilator or CPAP machine to help them to breathe so that it gives the breathing muscles time to rest and recuperate. However, putting a myasthenic patient on a ventilator is still also a risk, because there is a possibility that the patient will get accustomed to the machine breathing for them, and they would not then be able to breathe on their own when they come off the ventilator. So then they will have to be put back on the ventilator.
Okay, so we've learned a little now about Minustinus Gravis. Deanne, tell us, when did you learn that you had this condition?
I found out I had myasthenia gravis, I believe it was either 2013 or 2014. I can't remember the exact year, but I remember before that, I had been feeling tired a lot, and the doctors had been running tests. I was like out of breath, doing these simple things, just walking and stuff. And the blood tests were normal. All the tests were coming back normal. No one could figure out what was going on. The doctor said it was probably my asthma. And then a day I was at work, I had just returned to work, and my eye was drooping. And my supervisor said to me, "I don't like how your eye looks. You need to leave work and you need to go to the doctor." So I went to Fast Track, and Fast Track sent me to a clinic at the hospital where I saw Dr. Crystal Drake. I believe her name is, she's the sanitor now. At first, she and her consultant were stumped as to what was going on. And then she said she had an idea. She spoke with another doctor by the name of Dr. Gotwani. And they said, because it's so expensive to test for myasthenia gravis, what they would do is they would treat me like I have it. And if the medication worked, then it means I have myasthenia gravis. And that was how I got my diagnosis.
Okay, so after you were diagnosed, Deanne, what were your emotions like? How did you cope with the knowledge of knowing that you had myasthenia gravis and knowing the symptoms, what is expected to come once an individual has myasthenia gravis?
When I found out I had myasthenia gravis, I was relieved, because, you know, people were starting to think that it was probably in my head. So it was a relief knowing that they actually know what is wrong with me. I had never heard about myasthenia gravis, so I didn't even know what to expect. So my mom is a nurse, and she knew about it because of Dennis Johnson. So she told me, "Well, I'm not going to tell you what it is. You need to go and do your own research." So I went and I did my own research. Usually, you know, they say that people go through certain stages when finding out they have certain conditions. You know, you have the denial, the anger, the acceptance and stuff. But I think I just went straight to acceptance for a while. And then years later, you know, it finally, the other stages hit me when it more impacted my life, where there were a lot of things that I would like to do that I couldn't as much or at certain times. So something as simple as doing my hair can actually be hard. And, you know, when it goes into crisis, I have to depend on other people to do things for me and stuff. So it was a couple of years later, it was kind of hard dealing with all of those emotions and not being able to, because I was a person that I was accustomed to like going out and partying and then getting up and going to work or just leaving the party, going home, bed and go to work. But that can no longer be my life because my body can't handle it. So even if I do it, it has to be a case where I'm not going to work after or where I have a day or two to try to recuperate. And sometimes even with that day or two, you're still tired. I'm a lot more accepting now after like through the phases of anger and stuff. And I still have a lot I struggle with sometimes because it's hard on work sometimes to not feel well, but you know, you still have to get up and go because you have an illness. People would say that you're always sick, or people will not understand because they think, okay, so you have an illness, we have to come to work and we have to do our work too, so you have to do your work. But my work ethic has never been the problem. I'm fortunate that I do have some colleagues that if I'm not feeling 100%, they do pick up the slack because they understand. But it's still a learning process. It helped, you know, joining the Myasthenia Gravis Association. So I am able now to raise more awareness for it. And I really do hope that I can become an advocate for myasthenia gravis.
Okay. So I heard you mention that you had to change some of your habits, some of the expectations you had as well in relation to how you lived your life, how you, you know, did certain tasks, carried certain responsibilities, and that it was a big learning curve for you. Would you say you have made that adjustment enough, or is there still some aspects of the process that you're going through? You said you went straight to acceptance, then you a few years later you went back through the other stages. Where would you say you're at now?
Now, I would say currently I am at acceptance. Last year, I found out that I actually have refractory MG, which means that I have actually stopped responding to most treatments. There's a medication called neostigmine that they actually give you when you are in crisis to bring you out of the crisis. However, I get a really bad adverse reaction to neostigmine, so they can't give me neostigmine. So it was hard finding out that the treatments they were giving me before that I am no longer responding to. So I actually had like 3 hospitalizations last year. And the last one I had in November, if that hospitalization didn't work, then they would need to change my medication. And the medication that they were going to put me on was a cancer drug, a drug that they use for people with chemotherapy. So then there was the possibility of me losing all of the hair on my body and stuff. And that was something that I really struggled with, and I still struggle with up to this day. But I was fortunate that the last hospitalization, the IV medication actually did work. So now it's just a matter of figuring out if to wait until I go into crisis before I get the medication again, or if to just bring me in periodically 2 or 3 times a year to just administer the medication prophylactic.
Okay, Deanne, so tell us now, you really shared very candidly with us about some of the situations that are confronting you as a young woman with myasthenia gravis, and how do you manage the medication aspect of your condition. Are there any other drugs from your research that could possibly assist with the myasthenia gravis?
The problem is that we do not have the same level of access to the drugs and treatments that people do in the States. So plasmapheresis is one, which is where you get a pour and the blood is taken from your body, the plasma and stuff, and it's put back in. That is a treatment that actually seems to help a lot of people. However, it's not a treatment that is offered in Barbados. Also, overseas, while there are more treatments available, a lot of the drugs are still also experimental. So they're still going through trial phases. There are 1 or 2 drugs which have actually passed the trail phases that are on the market. I can't remember the exact name right now, but they are still new and they will not be anything that we have access to in Barbados. Treatment for myasthenia gravis is very expensive overseas with insurance. One single treatment can run you up to $100,000. Even here in Barbados, the medication that I get, if the hospital doesn't have it and it has to be bought, my mother has had to pay for it in the past, and that medication is $25,000 for a 5-day dosage.
So it's pretty expensive.
Yes, it is. And that is in Barbados. That medication costs more money in the States. So it's a case because there is no cure. They are still trying to do more research to try to figure out what else works. Some people are now looking to go the way since the medicinal cannabis industry is growing. Some people are actually saying that the medicinal cannabis can actually help with the condition. So they now have to conduct studies to see if it actually helps people and stuff. So there is progress that is being made in treatments. However, I don't know if a lot of the progress would ever reach Barbados.
Deanne, you would have shared now in terms of your health and medical component of myasthenia gravis. How would you say this condition, MG, has impacted your social life and your romantic life?
My social life has definitely taken a hit with myasthenia, because as I said, when I was younger, before I was diagnosed with the condition, I would go out and I would party and I would come home, bed, and go back to work, or maybe sleep 2 or 3 hours and go back to work. So I would do that 3-4 times a week, sometimes maybe 5. I can no longer do that twice a week. I might get away with doing it once a week, but it would still take a toll on me if I do it regularly. In terms of my romantic life, the reality is that a lot of people don't know about the condition and they think that they can handle being there for you. But to see someone you care about, that there's nothing you can do for them in that present moment, you know, they may be hooked up to machines. It's hard on people. I am not in a relationship, but I've been fortunate that I have a friend who has shown up for me for the last almost 2 years since he's been in my life. And whenever I'm sick, he's there. So I am fortunate in that aspect. And I have my mom and my sis. And even I have friends who, well, they may not be able to come and look for me on the ward, they still show up for me in other aspects. Whether they send greetings or sometimes, as June is my senior awareness month, sometimes they would even post some of the information about myasthenia gravis to help raise awareness. And for that, I am fortunate and thankful.
Wonderful. Indeed, that is heartening news to know that there are still lots of good people who will stand by your side and be there for you to really show up. Let's look at the other angle of employment. I think you mentioned you were working before you were diagnosed with myasthenia gravis. Share a little about what the experience has been working in the open job market with your condition.
Right. So I would have been working when I was diagnosed, and unfortunately, I ended up losing the job because I had to be on sick leave regularly because they were now trying to get the condition under control. So as a result of that, I was let go from the job. The job market with myasthenia gravis can be very tough due to the fact that a lot of people back then were not necessarily aware of it, and they just heard that you had a medical condition and they saw you as a liability. I at one point did an interview and the person said to me, "You are the perfect candidate for this job. However, my concern is that you are a liability to my organization." What I think people don't realize is that, well, yes, you do have a medical condition, or even a person may have a disability. People with medical conditions and disabilities, we feel as if we have a lot more to prove because we are sick. And we are actually an asset to the organization. Yes, you know, sometimes we may have to take sick leave, but the level of work that we give when we are there and the level of dedication that we have to our job, we do a very good job. I currently work at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital as a relief officer. I am hoping to hopefully become permanent soon. I work in medical records, mostly stationed in accident and emergency records, but I would have had sick leave while on the job. And for all I know, it could be a level of something of concern for the people. And maybe that may be why, you know, just watching to see what happens. But I would love people to understand that we are an asset and we are not a liability because of our condition or our disability.
Thank you for making that point, because it is an extremely valid point when we are thinking of persons with disabilities, persons with chronic illnesses being part of the open job market. They can contribute significantly to the development of our nation through employment. Okay, so Deanne, now share with us in terms of your organization. Medicinas Gravis Association, June is recognized as a month where you commemorate and celebrate and host activities and promote general awareness. What are some of the activities being hosted for June?
At the end of May, well, it's not June as yet, the association is actually doing a picnic for all the members, and they would also be reaching out to anybody else who is interested in coming. At the end of May, I believe the date is May 27th for the picnic.
For June, we are going to have a church service at Calvary Meridian the first Sunday in June, starting at 9:30. And the theme is turning awareness into action. We are also going to be doing pop-ups at various locations every Saturday in June to help raise awareness. So on June 3rd, from 12 to 4 p.m., we're going to have an information booth at Sheraton Mall. The church service will be on June 4th. On June 10th, we're going to be at Sky Mall from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. June 17th, we're going to do Bridgetown Duty Free from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And on June 24th, we're going to do Massey Warrings from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
But every Saturday in June, we will go to a different shopping complex and we will help raise awareness on myasthenia gravis.
Fabulous. Tell us some of the activities that your organization has done over the years to, you know, continue the awareness raising.
Well, we have been going for the last few years to different places before COVID and raising awareness. We've done cake sales to help bring in funds to the organization, as well as to also help raise awareness. We've done the church services every year, and we have also done luncheons. Every December, the organization hosts a luncheon and we invite people to come and support, and the money from the luncheon goes towards the association. And the association with those funds would sometimes help out members who are in need. So during COVID, we would have distributed some fruit baskets and different baskets with goods for the people in the association to help, so they would not have to go out into the community and go to the supermarkets and expose themselves. There is a dental plan that it helps assist with for dental and vision. And, you know, if a person is in need of help, you know, they can reach out to the association as long as they're a member. And if the association is able to help, then they'll help that person. So, you know, we're just trying to find more sponsors or people to come and sponsor the organization, and just trying to come up with more events to help raise funds that we are able to help our members. Occasionally, once or twice, someone would have gone to conferences overseas to help gather more information, to help us be able to put it out there to the members so that they have better understanding and they're aware of some of the new innovative cutting edge methods that are possibly coming about for the treatment of this condition.
Fabulous. And I know that I personally have attended several of the information sessions relating to myasthenia gravis. And as you said, that has been very useful in helping to bring greater awareness, better understanding of the condition and the various medications and exploratory research that is being done. As we get ready to wind up the program, Deanne, what are some of your thoughts in relation to ensuring that Barbados is more inclusive for persons with disabilities, persons with chronic illnesses? What are some of the areas that the Myasthenia Gravis Association would want to see more work being done in the particular area?
Some work that I would honestly like to see done is, I've realized that there are still a lot of doctors, they have heard about the condition, but they don't necessarily know much about the condition. So I would like to find a way that I am able to go and speak to medical professionals like EMTs, nurses, and even doctors, whether both private and public doctors, to help them to understand myasthenia gravis a little more, but not only from the perspective of the doctor, but also from the patient's perspective, because no one person is the same. And you do have those cases like myself that are outside of the box. And I find that sometimes the doctors don't fully understand how to deal with those patients. You know, they're textbook in a lot of instances, and they don't understand that in some instances, you cannot be textbook. You have to think outside the box, because this person does not fit the usual textbook explanation or signs and symptoms or even treatment for the myasthenia gravis. So that is something that I would like to do. I really want to get out there more to become a better advocate, you know, to help raise awareness, not only for the medical profession, but just in general, because once again, we can be an asset to the organization. The world is evolving, you know, things are getting better. So there are certain jobs that you can do from home. You don't necessarily have to come into the workplace 5 days a week. You might only need to come in 2 days. And then the other 3 days, you may be able to work from home. And even we just want to be able to have the opportunity to showcase our talent and our skills, and that, you know what, we can do this. We are an asset to the organization and to the workforce.
Well said, Deanne. Very well said. And as you spoke about working from home, that remote working concept, I think, is still a difficult concept for some employers to embrace. Give us your solution. How would you, if you were an employer or if you had the opportunity to guide employers on how to balance employees with disabilities and chronic illnesses to really have both? You work at home some days, you come into the office setting the other days. How would you guide the employer to approach the employee with it, and what type of structure and systems would they need to put in place?
Well, for those people who may be in a wheelchair, obviously, you know, they would have to have wheelchair accessible places for the person when they do need to come into the office. But there are some jobs in, like, let's say, accounting or even in research or even in medical transcription, where the person can actually work from home. And if they don't have to come into contact with persons, then the employer can find out what is the more suitable time for them to their hours. So it might not necessarily be a traditional 8:30 to 4:30. It might be a case where the person is comfortable working in the night into early morning, because, you know, they may have problems sleeping, or that is when it's cooler. So, you know, they don't necessarily have to deal with some of the tiredness from the condition that would be there from the heat. So it would be what suits the person best based on the job that they are in. If it's something that the person has to come into the office and they're okay to come into the office, let's say from 3 to 7, but from 10 to 1, they still do some work from home and then come into the office the afternoon. So it would be a case-by-case basis suited to the company and the kind of work they do. But you will find persons with disabilities generally tend to lean towards jobs where they do not necessarily have to go into the office, or where they may not necessarily have to come into contact or deal with people regularly, because it's easier to just work from home doing things like filing, research and stuff.
I certainly agree with you that the employer would need to have a conversation with the employee. And one of my biggest concerns is how, or not necessarily how, but that a balance could be struck for social interaction. Because sometimes we are thinking, yes, the person can work from at home and that's it. But that social interaction is still necessary for the emotional well-being of the individual. And it also helps in terms of building the awareness amongst our population without disabilities, and really prove to other individuals that disability can truly be included, you know?
Yes, please, I agree. I hope that, you know, as the world evolves more, we are always talking about gender equality and all of this equality. So I hope that moving forward, we can have more equality for persons who have disabilities. Yes, you know, we have places like Massey that have made a move now to employ persons with disabilities, and we really do appreciate and commend them for the stance that they have taken to allow us and give us a chance. But I hope that going forward, we can see more employers being open to that idea and giving people the chance at least to prove that they can actually be an asset to the organization.
Yes, I agree with you, Deanne. The equality or the equal opportunities for persons with disabilities to become part, a meaningful and productive part of the labor market is essential. And again, these are areas that need some more exploration and dialogue so that we have a society that's fit for all.
Yes,
now,
please.
Deanne, I think we have covered quite a lot in our conversation today, Deanne, and it really has been good hearing from you as a young woman living with myasthenia gravis. And as you think about your colleagues, your members, co-members in the myasthenia gravis association, what would be one area that your organization, your association, is strongly advocating for change?
One area that we would strongly be advocating for change would be in the more knowledge in the health sector, because, well, the medical doctors or nurses may know about myasthenia gravis. We have nurses on other wards that are not medical wards who would not know about it. And sometimes they see it as you are playing truant or you're just looking for attention if you come in for a different issue, but the myasthenia gravis flares. So one area that we have always and will continue to do is raise awareness, especially in that health sector, so that we can receive a lot better care when we are patients, even if it's not for the myasthenia gravis, but it does flare up due to something else going on. So knowledge, especially for the nurses. Too many times we've heard members complain about the treatment from nurses or, you know, sometimes doctors who aren't fully aware, and, you know, the doctor or the nurse might say they think that the patient is playing truant or the patient is just looking for attention. And someone else would then have to come and say, well, you know, this person has myasthenia gravis and they're not playing truant. This is actually what the person goes through. So, you know, that we can go to the hospital and be taken seriously and not have to worry about if someone is going to listen to us or if they're just going to be passed over if we say we have a particular complaint or we need something because the person doesn't fully understand.
Good point. Good point. Because I think sometimes we neglect the importance of the person's experience, what they're sharing and how they are experiencing and feeling the particular condition or symptom at that moment. So I would urge the myasthenia gravis Association to continue to advocate and promote the awareness so that generally we'll have improved service delivery to persons living with any type of medical condition. So Deanne, I want to thank you very much for being so forthright with us and allowing us to have a look into your life and how myasthenia gravis has impacted you. And we want to say thank you to the myasthenia gravis Association as well for being there over the past 20 years and helping to create greater awareness and understanding of the condition, as well as to promote better systems for the care of persons living with myasthenia gravis. So thank you very much, Deanne.
And thank you for having me as well.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Udalee Wickham-Ashby, and my very special guest today, Deanne Phillips from the myasthenia gravis Association. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or via Starcom on 1-246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can go to the VOB929.com website and look for the Visions radio program and listen to this and past episodes. So until next week, love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Take care.